Good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday, February 24th, 2021 hearing of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you have the contents of your virtual packets available to you, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Abney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels. Representative Damath. Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan. Representative Marquardt is excused. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson, I see her on the call here. We'll mark her as here. Oh, go ahead.
Present.
Perfect, thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott is excused. Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang. And Representative Joachim.
Present.
And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Mueller, have you had a chance to review the minutes from Tuesday, February 23rd?
Chair, and I so move the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion to the Mueller motion? Excuse me. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller, would you also be kind enough to move the minutes from Thursday, February 18th? We're playing a little catch-up here, it looks like.
No problem. Thank you, Chair. I do so move those minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion to the second Mueller amendment? Or excuse me, second Mueller motion?
Nope.
Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you again, Representative Mueller. Members, today we're hearing two bills, both of which we'll be laying over, House File 378 and House File 786. First up, House File 378. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 378 to be before the committee and to be laid over for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move for House File 378 to be before the committee and be laid over for possible inclusion in a larger bill or for consideration at a later date.
Thank you very much. And members, we're looking to wrap up our consideration of House File 378 by about 10:55. With that, Chair Joachim, please proceed with introducing your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing House File 378 in the committee today for your consideration. We had a great discussion in education policy before this. As an education support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. House File 378 requires that education support professionals, ESPs, also known as paraprofessionals, are given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill proposes an appropriation to pay for this, and there is a very thorough fiscal note in your electronic packet that reflects the cost of 16 hours of training per ESP. There are also requirements that those who work with individual students with disabilities must be given paid time to review a student's IEP and or time to collaborate with the student's teacher regarding the plan. This communication between teacher and paraprofessional who are working with students with special needs is so very important, so that the para knows what triggers the students may have, what works to calm or motivate them, and what vulnerabilities they may have. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools, but this bill would not only make sure the training is happening, it would also provide the funding for schools to provide the training. This year already, your committee has heard from teachers, parents, administrators, and school boards about how important trained and qualified support staff are in meeting our students where they're at, especially during this last year, during a global pandemic. This last intern was one of the first in a while that I have not worked as an ESP. In previous years, I have worked as an ESP with kindergartners with special needs in a level 3 EBD program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park. I've also worked as a paraprofessional in early childhood and at the high school level. Over the years, I've seen how effective paraprofessionals training can be. I also have seen what happens when training is not available, or when you start after the school year has begun and the training has to be done on your own time. That happened to me when I started at Aquila a few years ago. Even though I had started at the beginning of the school year at Aquila, it was after some training time had been provided. So I had about 5 hours or more of online modules dealing with health and safety that had to be viewed on my own time. I was happy to do it, but our ESPs deserve to get paid for their time when they're training to do their jobs. Finding those funds can be even harder than finding the time. With the appropriation, this bill would provide our schools some relief. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus training their ESPs as a fully functioning team that could do so much more to serve our students. While this is my story, I know that it's not a unique one. And now I'd like to turn the rest of the testimony over to those who have personal experience in the classroom. I have Becky Aspen here with Education Minnesota, who's also Osseo Area Schools Educational Supports President, and Michelle Denard, Special Education Support Preparer Professional in the Osseo Area School District. And I will turn it over to Ms. Aspen.
Chair Joachim, thank you for that. Ms. Hespin, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Becky Hespin, and good morning, Chair Dabney and committee members. I'm an educational support professional from Osseo Area Schools, currently on leave to serve as full-time release president, representing 800 educational support professionals in our district. This is my 29th year with Osseo Schools. I'm here once again to advocate for funding to support training for paraprofessionals. Can you imagine a profession where there's no initial training for a new employee? Or can you imagine a profession in which there's not ongoing training so they can enhance their professional skills? When an educational support professional is hired, there's no time for even a building orientation or sometimes even an introduction to the teachers you'll be working with to support students. You'll be working with students with multiple needs, whether that's in special education, English language learners, and or behavior support, to name a few. We're hired to provide academic support, as well as physical and emotional or behavior support, all without any formal training on different disabilities or de-escalation or restorative practices. You either learn it as you go or you may fail miserably. This is not what we want for our students, and it's not what we want for our employees. Many of us have chosen this as a profession and have been asking for training to excel in our profession, and yet there seems to be a hierarchy in districts as to who's more worthy of training. The standard answer is there's no money for educational support professionals. While there are state statutes in place that declare what school districts are to provide educational support professionals in the area of training, specifically statute 125A.08 for special education support professionals and statute 120B.363 for initial training, these statutes are being ignored by districts because they declare there's no funding. While I don't believe the district should be able to pick and choose which statutes they follow, providing funding for districts to comply with statute would be a great leap forward. This year has been especially difficult for educational support professionals. We've had to reinvent the way that we support students in ever-changing models of learning without training and using district technology or learning platforms. We've been that daily support for students struggling not only with learning, but the social, emotional, and behavior fallout, all without the training the teachers and other school support personnel have had. We do this because our passion is working with students. What we're asking for is funding for districts to provide what they should be for educational support professionals and for the students that we support. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to advocate for educational support professionals. It's been an honor.
Chair Gavney, you're muted.
I saw that. Thank you, Ms. Burt. Ms. Hespin, thank you for that. Ms. Denard. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Daphne and committee members. My name is Michelle Denard. I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District 279. I have worked in Osseo area schools for 16 years. I love my job and I want to help all students. I work with students with special needs in the transition program, ages 17 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders, learning difficulties, like fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses, etc. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support all students. It's important that all students' needs are met, no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses a wheelchair. As a special education paraprofessional, we are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student's needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for support and goals. This is inequitable for EXPs. We work with students as well as teachers, and sometimes we are with the students more than the teacher. So we need this training. Without paid time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. When we walk into our classroom to work with students, we are required to meet the students' needs. And without the appropriate paid training, it is impossible. Most training is offered for licensed staff a week or two before school starts. For ESPs, we have to always get training in the evening or when all ESPs have the day off of school. With that, a lot of ESPs have children and or other jobs that they have to go to in the evening hours, or they have no one to care for their children while they go to train to help their students. If ESPs can get the training at the same time when licensed staff get the training, during the summer or when licensed staff get the day off for professional development, ESP should be able to do professional development with licensed staff. That would be beneficial for both staff and students. We are required in special education to take a CPI training, which stands for Crisis Prevention Intervention. Most of the time when the training is being offered, ESPs are unable to do the training due to the time frame when the training is occurring. And there is no good time to take the training when, as ESPs, our time is needed to be with the students. When we normally take training, it's not paid training, and we have to do it on our day off from school. On behalf of all Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have the proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you. chair members and for authoring, and I thank you, Joachim, Representative Joachim, for authoring this bill, and thank you, chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Denard. Members, any questions for the testifiers or the author? Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. Given that, Chair Joachim, would you like to make any closing comments?
Hold it.
Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take a moment to thank Representative Joachim for bringing this bill forward. As an educator of 27 years, I have firsthand knowledge of the importance of the role of a para in a classroom, the work that they do with our students. And I could go on and on about that. I can only be successful as an educator because of the wraparound services for our students that paras often supply or provide. But I think the thing that is most powerful to me is I'm a parent of a child with special needs. And without the para's support, my son could not be successful in his school setting. And it's still a struggle. But when paras are not given the opportunity to train adequately, the proper time, it really leaves them liable and ultimately places students in a position of being at risk, whether it's from physical needs not being transported properly or even emotional needs. Ms. Denard talked about training for fetal alcohol syndrome. These are, our students come with so many unique situations, and how you approach those students are not the same way, and they need that specialized, individualized training, and we should never downplay the importance of the work that they do. This bill is so critical, and Joachim, I just appreciate you again bringing it forward. And to all of the paras that testified, I just want to say how much I appreciate the work you are doing, especially in COVID. You nailed it on the head when you talked about having to really take unique approaches. I know in the district that I'm in, we have paras that are delivering meals, delivering packets of paper, and going so far above and beyond just what you see in a classroom. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so very much. And members, I urge a support for this extremely reasonable and much needed bill.
Thank you, Representative Sandstein, bringing your personal and professional experience to the deliberations today. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Joachim, I'm glad that you had your testifiers note the statutory references. I'm looking at 120B.363 and wondering what interaction you have had with PALSB or anyone in your organization to call attention to training possibilities and initial training. You know, are we missing something? Is what you're asking for above and beyond what is noted here for the credentials for paraprofessionals? I mean, I just need a little bit of explanation. I'm so glad that the statutory references have been given, but there must be some kind of misstep here. So could you explain that, please?
Representative Joachim.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, can you mention that statute again? I was just looking it up.
Well, the one I mentioned is 120. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 120B.363 is credential for education paraprofessionals. And it was Ms. Hesbitt that mentioned it. And she also mentioned the other one was 125A.0942. So perhaps she could comment on these two statutory references.
Mr. Chair, I think I can handle
Chair
this. I've been a para myself too, but No, the rulemaking and the training, it mostly focuses on knowledge base for qualitative, right, you know, criteria, knowledge on reading, writing, and math. So that's where PELSB gets into that, and districts do that. I did have to take tests on that when I became a para. What we're really talking about here is the additional training, and it also talks about emergency procedures, confidentiality. Yes. Those are the modules that I mentioned that I had to take 5 hours of on my own time because I started at the district day of school instead of the 2 weeks before because I hadn't been a para before, where they were given the option of coming into school, helping the teacher set up the classroom, and then taking those modules at school, which, by the way, you had to bring your own personal device because they didn't have devices for the paras to watch the modules on. Just another note there. But what we're talking about here is the extra training that is desperately needed to make sure that paras can work with students, all students, especially students with special needs. One of the trainings that Ms. Denard mentioned was the CPI training, Crisis Prevention Intervention, which is a wonderful training. It's a 12-hour training. When I took it at Hopkins, they crammed it into 8 hours. We were given paid time to do it, but it is one of those trainings that needs to be renewed every few years. And when I went to another school, they didn't have the money to help renew the license or the time to have me take off because it's really hard to find parasubs to take off to train. And this non-crisis prevention and intervention training really helps with all children and their social emotional learning, trying to figure out how to approach this. A lot of de-escalation techniques. Frankly, I think a lot of our folks, our staff, I've been actually pushing for our staff here at the legislature to take this training for quite a few years as well. So that's just one of the basic ones. That's not talking about other training around cultural competency or training on, as Ms. Denard mentioned, transporting a student, a very vulnerable, medically fragile student out of a wheelchair to toilet. There's a variety of other specific trainings that are needed. And while it is in the other statutes around IEPs, there's no funds for schools to do it. This would help fund this program and these training programs so that it's not an unfunded mandate on our schools. So that's why I keep bringing this bill forward. This is the third year now, and I will keep plugging away at it because I think it's that important.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Yelakim. So there's no ability to transfer any of these costs through special education funding. Is that correct?
Chair Yelakim.
Representative Erickson. I want to stress that all the training that I've taken isn't just for kids with special needs. A lot of this training, the CPI training, I took when I was a para at the high school in the hallways, lunchroom, and hallway, cafeteria, and study hall. So that CPI training, which is probably one of the best that's out there, it's for all kids, not just for SPED. So same with all the emergency training, the bloodborne pathogens, all the other modules we have to take.
Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I recall, when I was a teacher, and of course, I've been retired for a while, but our staff development covered that which you just mentioned. But thank you. I'm going to study this some more, and you're putting this in the base. Is that correct for us? So it's an ongoing cost. Representative Yelakim.
Chair Yelakim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's still up for discussion, as is being able to adjust depending on what the forecast looks like and adjusting hours per paid. So same thing that we did 2 years ago, too.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say how strongly in support of this bill I am. We have a lot of conversations around how schools should function more like the private sector in terms of efficiency and operations and responsiveness. And I just think, like, as a law firm owner, you know, I hire paralegals. I cannot imagine telling them to train how to do their job on their own time. And especially with the importance of the role of paraprofessionals in our kids' lives at our schools. So this just is totally common sense to me, and I'm really, really supportive and glad that Representative or Chair Yelakim brought it to the committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Joachim, closing comments.
Yes, thank you, members, and thank you for the good questions. I really do think we can get this across the finish line this year. And I really want to thank the ESPs for their testimony and all the work they've done during school. Your work is so important. It was important before COVID. It was extremely important during COVID, and it will be important long after COVID to meet our students where they're at. And I want to thank Representative Sandsteed for sharing her personal story. Representative Poston and Education Policy shared a very personal story as well, too. And it's really important for us to have all these voices to the table. ESPs are the folks in our schools who provide most of the direct services to students with disabilities, as well as support for the entire student population. We trust ESPs with very important caretaking tasks. They need professional development to be successful with their students and in their careers, and we owe them at least a chance to receive that training and to have it be paid. As Representative Feist said, in the private sector, it would be highly unusual to throw somebody in without training for their job. You've heard testimony about how important and effective this training is, and I sit before you with a personal experience of how valuable that training can be. Thank you, members, and I ask you for your support of this bill.
Thank you very much. And with that, Chair Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 378 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Thank you very much. Representative Thompson, would you like to make a motion to move House File 786 to be before the committee and to lay it over for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date? Maybe not. Representative Feist, would you be so kind as to make that motion?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Feist. Members of the committee and members of the public who are looking to lay this bill over by 11:55 a.m. As those who are here regularly know, we have hard stops given the technology and the demands on the House Public Information Department. Representative Lee, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your bill introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Feist, for moving my bill. House File 786 is a statewide initiative supported by many organizations that work together through the state's after-school network called Ignite After School. The purpose of House File 786 is to make permanent the state's commitment to high-quality after-school programs. In the bill, there is an specify amount each year for competitive grants for after-school community learning programs that have the following objectives. To increase access to protective factors that build young people's capacity to be productive adults, developing skills and behaviors necessary to succeed in post-secondary education or career opportunities, and encouraging school attendance and improving academic performance. The bill also specified that grants should be awarded to programs that primarily serve students eligible for free and reduced price meals and provide opportunities for academic enrichment and other services activities to meet program objectives. And the grants also required to be awarded equitably among the geographic areas of the state without giving preference to any particular grade. The bill also requires the Department of Education to monitor and evaluate grant recipient performance and effectiveness and meeting the program objectives. And with me today, Mr. Chair, are testifiers who have been working to accomplish this for several years.
Fantastic. Thank you, Representative Lee. I understand that the first testifier on my list is Ms. Dennison Kanin.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Good to see you again. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kanin, and I am the executive director of Ignite After School. We are Minnesota's statewide after school network, and we're an intermediary organization. So we don't directly provide after school programs, but instead we bring together all the different kinds of organizations that do, from community education and schools to parks and libraries, as well as many small and large nonprofits, like the YMCA network in the state, as well as Boys and Girls Club. Our primary aim at Ignite is to close race, income, and geography-based access gaps to after-school and summer learning. We do this through partnership building. And then our other aim is really to focus on quality. And so we do a lot of professional development as well as leading the continuous program improvement process for after-school programs around the state. And I am very excited to be here with you today to talk in support of House File 786, which does establish a competitive grant program to fund really comprehensive, well-designed, high-quality after-school and summer learning opportunities for students in K through 12th grade. Representative Lee covered the three primary aims of the grant, but I do want to stress again some of those key aims and their importance. So the first one being to really center youth and adult partnerships and relationships. So a real important piece of young people being successful in school, but also in life, is to really have access to caring adults, to build relationships there. We know that when young people have those kinds of relationships, they do better in school and they also stay away from risky behaviors. We also know that after school programs can be a big part of helping young people build sort of 21st century skills or those social emotional learning skills that are important for post-secondary and career opportunities. And after school also plays a role in supporting better attendance in school and academic performance. I wanted to share a little bit about what we mean at Ignite when we talk about after school and summer learning, in case you're like, what is this though? So there's a couple really, I think, important things to note about what is a high quality after school and summer learning. One, it really does center relationships. So it is, when we train youth workers, we're talking about what is the positive relationship you're building with young people. Another is it's really about choice and youth voice. So we're looking at young people being a part of, you know, what kinds of learning opportunities they want to be having. So that's really important. The other piece is that the learning is often hands-on, project-based. It's engaged learning. So we're really looking for things like, I'm going to give you some examples, like community gardens, service learning, building robots, so really hands-on STEM learning. And another piece is that high quality after school really pairs team building and recreation with this sort of content-based learning. High quality after school and summer learning, it complements formal school day learning, but it doesn't replicate it. So I also wanted to share a little bit of research about after school programs. And I have been at this committee for many years and shared a lot of research, but this is new research that I'm very excited about. So this is the study of early care and youth development, and papers are just coming out. It's the first study of its kind because it's longitudinal. So it's looking, it followed about 1,300 young people from birth to age 26. And they're just starting to produce papers on sort of, you know, asking questions of this data set. So one thing that's unique is that it looked at early learning and after school and summer learning. And what we're what it found is that regular participation in after school and summer learning in the elementary grades resulted in higher math and reading test scores at age 15. So in that ninth grade transition period. They also looked at whether or not this made any difference, whether you were a low-income student or a middle or upper-income student. And what they found is that it had greater gains. So if you are a low-income student, you have greater gains in GPA in ninth grade than a middle and upper-income student would have. So what that tells us is that after-school and summer learning is particularly important for low-income students when we're looking at outcomes. Some other things that they're looking at out of this data set is around, they looked at middle and high school students and their participation in after school and found that it could act as a protective factor against substance abuse up to age 26. The study stopped at age 26, so hopefully it continues to have protective factors beyond that, but that we don't know beyond age 26. I think this research really demonstrates that after school programs can have a broad range of impacts from both academics to building 21st century skills to decreasing risky behavior. But it's also important to note that in Minnesota, after school participation is going down. And that is really, I think, problematic given the positive impacts that these programs have. So when we look at America After 3 p.m. Survey results, so America After 3 is a national parent survey. It's been conducted since 2004. And in 2020, the results for the very first time since 2004 look at participation is going down. So from 2004 to 2014, participation was going up in after school. And then in 2020, we started to see that number of participation in Minnesota go down. Also, for every one young person in an after-school program in Minnesota, the research found that there's three parents who are saying they want their child to participate and don't have access. This data is also borne out by Minnesota student survey data from 2016. So we disaggregated Minnesota student survey data by race and income in seven different regions around the state and found that white students and upper income students participate at a greater rate than low income students and students of color. And then I also just want to share that in Minnesota, there's the 21st Century Community Learning Center program. This is a federally funded grant program administered by MDE, and it does support these kinds of programs, but they're only able to fund one third of the applications they receive. So this really demonstrates that there's high demand for these opportunities from districts and community-based organizations across the state, and there just are not the resources to make sure that kids have access. We really believe that House File 786 and the After School Community Learning Grant Program is really going to help to close this gap across the state. Representative Lee shared, and I'll just say again, that the bill has been designed to make sure that all types of after school programs can apply. This is really important because every community across the state looks different, has different kinds of organizations. So we want to make sure that every different community who's interested can apply and can pull together the partnership of organizations that make sense. It also will work in rural, suburban, large, and small cities. We've seen that through 21st Century, and the bill requires that equitable distribution, focuses on students receiving free and reduced price lunch, and it also provides an opportunity for grant recipients to participate in professional development and continuous program improvement. The research I talked about earlier, that only happens when the program's high quality, so we want to make sure we focus there. We know that during this pandemic, young people and families have experienced a lot of stressors. And we really believe that now more than ever, these kinds of learning opportunities are really going to be important to help us support young people's mental well-being, their social well-being, as well as their academic success. So on behalf of Ignite After School and our broad network across the state, I want to thank you so much for your time and thank you for your consideration of House File 786. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dennison-Kanin. Members, just tracking, Representative Jordan has been excused from today's hearing. Representative Daniels has joined us. So thank you for that. We have a question from Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee, I noticed that in line 3.21 and then again in line 0.323, that there are two takings by the Department of Education for administration. The first one, as I said, no, I didn't say this, but the first one is for 2% for administration. The second one is for 5%, and that's for monitoring and assistance. Have you had a discussion with the department to find out exactly why they need these two different takings from your proposal for administration?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Erickson. I have not had this conversation with the Department of Education, but as the bill is being laid over, we can have this conversation and get back to the committee. I don't know if Ms. Dennison-Kanin have anything else to add on this.
Ms. Dennison-Kanin, do you have anything?
Chair Dabney, Representative Erickson. Yes, so the 2% is really just to build and lead the grant competition itself, so to run the grant competition. And then as I stated, high quality is really important. So the 5% is to provide continuous program improvement supports and professional development to grantees. This is done with 21st century programs, and I didn't bring it today, but I can share some of the results of 21st century programs if folks are interested. But we really believe that those outcomes cannot be achieved without the supports necessary to work on quality improvement and high quality effective practices of the programs. And so that's what they would be providing with those resources.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, it's a bit steep. Besides, you know, Ignite is going to get a 2.5% set aside for technical assistance. So, you know, I don't know what's happened in the past, but I have observed some after-school programs in Minnesota and also out of state. And I find the one that I visited in Denver about four years ago was highly structured, had lots of accountability, and the children really thrived. You know, they had after school, they had their snack time, they had their relaxation time, they had some library time, and then they were led into their structured settings. They had assistance with their academics, which I observed, and it was just top of the line. And then they had their skills and their relationship building. And it lasted till 6 p.m. And then the buses took the children to their homes or wherever they were to be delivered. And it was highly effective. But when I visited a couple programs in Minnesota, I found that they were very loosely organized. And I'm not talking about those from Ignite, because I know the one in Representative Cresha's district has done very well. But I just saw a lot of unstructure, and I'm hoping that if this proposal goes forward, that there's actually gonna be some teeth behind the accountability that needs to occur, especially now with an achievement gap that's growing, so that the children do get a chance to close the achievement gap through this after-school program, because they're getting extra attention in the areas where they might be behind. So, you know, those are questions that I have, and I think it's really important that if the department is going to call for this takings from this proposal, that they really are staying on top of things to ensure that our children are getting the most out of these programs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dennison-Kanin, do you want to respond to some of the structures that you have in place, the continuous improvement work you referenced? Expand on that a little bit for the committee to understand better.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davney and Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson, the program that you described from another state sounds exactly like what we're talking about in this bill. It's also very similar to a lot of the programs that you'll see in 21st century, and I do believe we have another testifier, and she could also attest to this and share what that looks like. But I will say that in Representative Cresha's district, that's a 21st century funded program. And so they are required to participate in continuous program improvement, utilize assessments, go through training. And I think that is what makes for a really high quality program. And that is why we have intentionally included those supports in this bill. I also just want to clarify that I believe in the bill, the 2.5% for Ignite, the up to is part of the 5% for MDE and not in addition to. And that's because Ignite operates the continuous program improvement process. And we do that in partnership with MDE for the 21st century grantees.
Thank you, Ms. Dennison-Kanin. I have Representative Lee, a Buddy King on the list from the YMCA Beacons program, but I understand that he had some schedule issues and is not able to attend, but there might be a statement of his. Ms. Dennison-Kanin, you look like I caught your interest.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davney. We have two testifiers in addition to myself, Jenny from Beacons, and then we also had Buddy King, who is a pastor. He had to proceed over a funeral this morning and was unable to attend. He did have written testimony, and I would love to be able to read that on his behalf, Chair.
If you would, and then Ms. Wright Collins, you're on deck since the Twins training camp is opened. I can go back to baseball references. Thank you, Ms. Dennison-Kanin. Please proceed with reading Mr. King's statement, Reverend King's statement.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Buddy King, and I am a father of five and a current first grader in a local elementary school in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I would like to take a moment and share with you the importance of after-school enrichment programs. Being a community leader, a former director of an after-school organization, and having my children, who are at least 6 years apart, has given me the personal assurance of these activities. My experiences and consistent push of these programs showed 43% improvement mixed with a number of other variables such as outside family support, conflict resolution skills, time management, teamwork, selflessness, and implementation of the golden rule to treat others how you want to be treated. Data shows that out-of-school activities present children with several skills they learn to master. Most of my time as a parent with my first child was really reacting and surviving. By child three, we quickly realized that improvements our children were beginning to make was because of their outside activities. We noticed the friendships that were beginning to take place that normally they would not have been exposed to. We are a close-knit family, a very large family, so it was nice to see them expand their cultural awareness. 2020 has taught us a lot of things. Most importantly, it taught us that learning happens more than just in the classroom. 21st century students have a hold on technology completely different than we did as children. These students utilize this platform for everything, but the one thing it will never be able to replace is SEL, or social emotional learning. As human beings, we all yearn for an interaction with others on some level, and the ability to interact with other students on a non-academic platform is powerful. Many educators and other nonprofit organizations have mastered the idea of learning with a purpose. Learning with a purpose is when you take an activity that children already do, such as pool. The game of pool is quite entertaining, and the concept of the game is basic geometry. Utilizing the same theories, you take these concepts and make it practical, fun. Depending on the level of the student would determine the level of deepness required. And I have seen students personally do better in math because of these activities, again, like dominoes or Monopoly. I could give more examples of everyday activities that could be used to enrich our students outside the classroom, but would run out of time. In conclusion, you, the elected representatives of the people, have the great pleasure and privilege to assure that all Minnesotans, no matter of race, creed, socioeconomic status, have every opportunity to receive the best educational experience possible. It's also important that we remember that learning does not just happen in the classroom. Learning happens whenever the eyes are open and the senses are taking in information. We have an achievement gap in the state between white children and children of color. We all want to see this gap decreased. There are a variety of programs helping to address this all over the state. CBOs across the state, such as Ignite, Higher Works Collaborative, and United Ways work tirelessly day in and day out to fulfill their mission of making sure every child has an opportunity to be successful in life. I leave you with this quote from Rashid Agunlara. Some strive to make themselves great. Others help others see and find their own greatness. It's the latter who really enriches the world we live in. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for the time.
Thank you, Ms. Dennison-Kaneen. Ms. Wright-Collins, welcome to the committee. Thank you for your time today. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Collins. I'm an executive director with the Beacons Network and the YMCA of the North. Pleased to be here today to speak on behalf of YMCAs and our youth development partners all around the state who are really committed to positive youth development. I want to just pause and respectfully invite each of you to take a breath and to picture a young person in your life, maybe someone in your family, maybe someone in your neighborhood, and to think about that young person, that child or that teenager, and to think about a hope you have for them as they navigate the challenges we're currently navigating as a state. And then to think about a milestone you're looking forward to for that young person, a hope you have, maybe 5 years, 10 years down the line. And I start that way because I think our opportunity right now is to take those hopes we each carry for our own kids, the kids in our families and neighborhoods, and extend those hopes to every young learner in Minnesota. And I'm so proud to be a part of the community of after-school programs and youth development agencies that partner with our schools and neighborhoods to close gaps in opportunity for young people. I often describe an invisible curriculum, that we have our visible curriculum, and then we have this invisible curriculum of learning and development opportunities where young people access relationships and enrichment opportunities like Carrie described, whether those be sports or art or leadership programs. And we have such a powerful opportunity through this funding to expand the access that young people have to really unleash their potential in our state. So I thank you for taking the time for that. And I hope you'll carry those hopes with you through this this next couple moments. So our Beacons Network serves about 5,000 young Minnesota learners each year. We are currently in Minneapolis and Richfield in 16 schools, working with students kindergarten through 12th grade. But our partners are broad and wide, and both through Beacons and through their youth development agencies are serving across the state. So Beacons is unique because we're a collaborative partnership between the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the YWCA, community education, and school districts and schools across our communities. And together we partner with young people and their families to close these gaps in opportunity. We provide high quality after school and summer programming that accelerates learning through enrichment and partners with low income youth and families to create equitable schools and communities. In response to this last year, we've partnered with our schools and agencies to provide wraparound support with low income families. And we've continued to engage our youth as change makers in responding to the emerging needs in our communities. One young person that I'd love to lift up, there's 5,000 plus stories, but I'll lift up one. Her name is Javonna Grimes, and Javonna is actually featured right now on the After School Alliance's website nationally. And she shares her perspective on youth voice and the importance of her after school staff in her life. But we're so proud to have seen how Javonna navigated the significant personal challenges in this last year. But despite those challenges and barriers, she continued on her educational path. She completed high school. And at the same time, she reached out to create more opportunities for other youth. So working through our Beacons after school programs, she created socially distanced, safe pop-up events for other young people in local parks, in partnership with our parks, schools, and agencies. She also, in addition to combating social isolation for teens in our community, she also made sure that she was on track for high school completion and enrolled for post-secondary. So she's such a great example of how our young people are resilient and they have the solutions to the challenges that we currently face, and their voices need to be a part of those solutions. So we know that these kinds of partnerships and programs produce significant outcomes for young people, both academic and social. Just to highlight a couple that we've seen across our Beacons network, we completed a 5-year longitudinal evaluation. This was with Minneapolis Public Schools, and found that 91% of Beacons youth graduated on time, significantly higher population than their peers. We also found Beacons youth attended school 1 week more than their peers. Their participation rates dramatically impacted behavioral referrals in school. And all of this happened despite serving the highest needs schools and young people who are from low-income communities, with 84% on free and reduced lunch compared to 50% in the district. We also know that 20% of our young people receive early special education services, and 34% are English language learners. So really representing the rich diversity of our young people in Minneapolis, and also seeing great outcomes in terms of their academic performance. And we know that these results happen not by accident, but because they're grounded in high quality youth development practices. And key strategies we use include developmental relationships, promoting youth voice and choice, and providing culturally responsive programming and staff. These strategies increase students' connection to school, their sense of belonging, and increase their sense of voice. So the Search Institute describes developmental relationships as having 5 key components, and we really see these exemplified in Beacons and other youth development programs, that our staff express care, challenge growth, provide support, share power, and expand possibilities. We also know that it's critical for youth to have staff in programs that are highly trained and also represent their racial and cultural background and lived experience. And we prioritize hiring from the communities where young people live. So in fact, 25% of our program staff are alumni of the program. We have alumni in other esteemed roles in the community, as well as evidenced by Representative Lee. So shout out to Representative Lee. And we also know that amongst our staff, not only are we intentionally putting into place culturally responsive programming, but we're also representing the cultures of our that our young people bring. 75% of our team members identify as people of color. We also centered youth voice and choice in the programming, and we know that builds social emotional capacities of our young people. So 90% of our participants say there's an adult at Beacons who helps when the young people have a problem. 80% say they get to do things that help people in their communities. And 96% of participants say that coming to Beacons has helped them find out what they're good at doing and what they like to do. So we're so proud of these results, and we're so grateful for your consideration of expanding funding to these critical supports for young people. We know that youth workers and youth development organizations play an important role in developing social emotional capacities, bridging between schools and community, and really engaging young people ultimately to participate in our democracy. I want to thank you, and I want to close with the words of, to go back to Giovanna. Her words on the After School Alliance website, she shares, include my feedback, we want to be heard. And so I thank you for hearing from me on behalf of our young people and families, and encourage us to continue to lift up opportunities for youth, especially those that lift up their voices. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Collins. Members and members of the public, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. At this point, Representative Lee, I see no other member questions. Do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present this. And just a quick comment to one of the statements that was made earlier about the MDE, Minnesota Department of Education, taking a piece of this for the grant administration. Just want to reemphasize to members of the committee that this is for evaluating the program recipients to make sure that they are meeting the objectives that we have laid out in the bill. And so this is a proposal that I brought forth with the work of the Ignite After School Network, and this is not an MDE proposal, and so just want to put that on the record, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Representative Lee. With that, Representative Feist renews her motion that House File 786 be laid over for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date. Ms. Dennison-Kanin, Ms. Collins, thank you much for your testimony today. Representative Lee, thank you. Members, that concludes our deliberations for today. Tomorrow, we'll be hearing House File 1065, which is the governor's budget bill. So a lot of information coming your way tomorrow. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you all.